Okay, I'm now going to try something that I had never tried before while podcasting. And I don't think it's dangerous, but it might be just a little bit. What I'm going to be doing is podcasting while driving a car. In case you're wondering, this is Terry Frost, and this is Paleo Cinema Podcast, the Newton Mass Edition. Currently driving around through a car park, believe it or not. Trying to get out of the car park so that I can get onto the street and go home from work. It's pretty much the only spare time I've got at the moment to podcast, so I thought I'd give it a go, go wild, try something different, get out of the rut, and get out my cast. Yesterday we saw Avatar. Sal and me and a couple of friends, Jamie and Sarah, popped off down to the local cinema and saw Avatar. Excuse the noise. We enjoyed it with qualifications. The 3D was fantastic. I love the fact that you get to put on those really funky Michael Caine in the Ipcrest file kind of sunglasses for the 3D effect. And it did eventually, though, get a little bit wearing to have the 3D glasses on for a movie that runs for 161 minutes. Not sure whether they thought that one through well. Excuse me while I go over a couple of speed bumps. But it's an interesting film from a technological point of view, though not necessarily from the point of view of plot line and those sorts of things. The immersiveness of the 3D was fantastic. We did enjoy that, but ultimately it was kind of a bit, when you take aside the wonder of the technology and the effects, it was just a little bit like Dances with Big Sexy Smurfs. Avatar, it's the first of its kind film, and you've got to give some kudos to James Cameron for that reason, but ultimately, not sure it was a success from a cinematic point of view. So we went and saw that, had a good time with that, went off to see Jamie and Sarah's new house and that kind of thing. And it got me thinking about tough guy actors. Everyone's talking about Sam Worthington, an Australian actor who was the star of Avatar. And yeah, he's got that kind of tough guy kudos with the sensitivity wrapped up in it. And there are a lot of people on the web, I've noticed, who are asking questions like, why can't American actors be tough guys anymore? Why are they all such wimps? Why is everybody trying to be Seth Rogen, basically? And I don't think there's really a good answer to that. I think that ultimately, tough guy actors have one thing in common. In some sense, they're working class. They're not children of privilege. Have a look. Bruce Willis, not a wealthy guy when he started out. He actually worked in the Socialist Theatre in New York in his early days. Look back on people like Robert Mitchum, poor as dirt. I think there's a kind of character that comes with struggle that some actors bring to what they do. There are going to be exceptions, of course, but in general terms, I think that not coming from privilege is a definite advantage in certain kinds of actors. Of course, the last podcast we talked about Warren Oates, definitely one of those exceptions. But it's an interesting phenomenon that rich kids never become good, solid, action film style character actors. They don't have that combination of innate toughness and sensitivity. Now, cruising down Spencer Street past Spencer Street Station in Melbourne, I'm actually finding it quite easy to talk and drive at the same time. I've got the headset mic on. I've got the portable podcasting gear here, and there's really no strain at all in doing both of those things at once, so pretty marvellous. What else have I been watching? Saw Fringe. Been watching Fringe, and I've got this new thing I'm really intrigued with, which is movies and TV shows which are encrypted with an extra layer of data, which is specifically designed for people who may be genre fans or who have a bit of trivia knowledge. There are a lot of things in a TV series like Fringe where the names of characters, the names of places, reference popular culture related to what the storyline of a particular movie or TV episode is. So I'll give you an instance. The latest episode of Fringe I saw, Leonard Nimoy's character, William Bell, this isn't too much of a spoiler, so please don't feel too afraid of it, performs some surgeries, without giving too much away, performs some surgeries under a nom de plume of, or not a nom de plume, nom de guerre, just about, of Dr. Paris. Now, people would go, okay, Dr. Paris, big deal, but there's an extra layer of data there. Paris was the name of the character Leonard Nimoy played in several seasons of Mission Impossible in the 1960s. So there's an extra layer of data there. One of the characters, only mentioned and referenced in the episode, has the same name as the alien played by David Bowie in The Man Who Fell to Earth. And the mental hospital that the characters visit in that episode is the Dunwich Mental Hospital, of course, referring back to the Lovecraftian wonders of the movie The Dunwich Horror with Dean Stockwell in it. So I'm intrigued by this idea of having an extra layer of data in a movie. It's been going on in books for a while. I mean, Kim Newman's work basically always has an extra layer of data which references popular culture related to the subject matter, but I always kind of like that. It doesn't detract from what people are watching if they don't get the references. There's no loss of data if you're not in on the joke, but there's that extra layer of data that's just below the surface for people who have the same weird turn of mind that I do and enjoy the wonders of trivia, and who have a mind that just makes these connections when they are in a work. So it's always good to just kind of do that. If you think something might be a reference to something, it may be worth your while just writing it down and Googling it when you're watching a TV show or a movie that's kind of got that hip, edgy, trivia kind of vibe to it. And just see if you can find those extra data. So that's the other thing we've been doing. By the way, the weather here is lovely and warm. We've got the air conditioning on here. It's a sunny day. It's just before Christmas. Lots of people running around with presents and little children. And lots of decorations around the streets. So it is quite Christmassy here in a peculiar Australian way, which pretty much means if you're out in the open, you're not going to freeze to death, unlike the case in a lot of the places you guys are. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a little bit of a breather here and pause this recording. I'll slip a bit of music in, but I'll continue on again once I get out of this city traffic and onto the freeway, and have a chat about something else. okay, I'm back into it now. I'm still stuck in traffic, unfortunately. It's the wonders of Christmas time at peak hour, so I'll just have to wear that. If you hear a little bit of a wind blowing into the microphone, that's actually the air conditioning around here. Just to let you know, there are some women in very short skirts walking across the road. Not a bad thing at all. Movies. So what am I doing? What I'm doing over Christmas. So what am I doing over the Christmas break? Not too much. We're going to visit Sal's parents and have dinner with them on Christmas Day. Just taking things easy. Money's a little bit tight as it is for a lot of people, and if you're one of them, you've definitely got my sympathy, and I hope everything does go well for the season of ho, ho, ho. That's the other thing. I've got a joke from Popbitch. What's the difference between Santa and Tiger Woods? Santa stopped at three hoes. But I got that from Popwich. If you don't know Popwich, Google it. A lot of popular culture trivia and gossip and things like that. It's another one of my guilty pleasures around life. But the other thing we're doing too is we're kind of compiling the DVD collection a little bit. There are a lot of things which, I'll be honest with you, we've copied DVDs at various stages. So I bought a DVD case the size of a small trunk. It's about the size of a pirate's chest, but it's more rectangular, and it's aluminium, and it holds 1,000 DVDs. So I picked up one of those on the weekend, and we're going to kind of get rid of some of the covers and make up a master list and store things there, because storage is starting to get tight back at the old rancho. So we're going to try to make sure that we don't have too much trouble with it. I'm getting a little feedback on this. I think it's because of the tram lines overhead. In case you don't know, Melbourne is just littered with trams. They tried to get rid of them. They laid baits. They had a bounty on them, but for some reason the vermin still seem to infest the place. Heading down towards the Crown Casino now, but I'm going to be turning off to the right and getting on the freeway. I really should take some pictures to go along with this podcast and do it as a slideshow on YouTube or something like that. But if you can hear that noise in the background, it's one of the trams pulling up here. And it seems to be swallowing a lot of people. I mean, they're carnivorous little bastards. But film. Yeah. I'm kind of... Blockbuster films are kind of a bugbear of mine at times. I get sucked into watching them, but essentially, the spectacle doesn't make up for the shallowness in some cases. And I've been trying to puzzle that out for myself and just kind of go, well, how do I really feel about these things? Am I seeing them because they're big blockbusters and they're advertised, or am I seeing them so I get a greater knowledge of what's capable technologically in cinema? They're meathead movies, but I don't think they're as entertaining a meathead movie as some of the, just say, a 1970s Roger Corman effort starring Claudia Jennings and David Carradine or something like that. There's just, there's a kind of street grittiness that's missing from these enormous blockbusters. They're no better films than a lot of those American International or New World Corman films. But the amount of money that gets thrown at them is amazing. I did see that silly piece of shit, G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra. Now, I was never a G.I. Joe fan, but I thought, check it out. So I picked up a copy and... yeah, there's nothing there. It's just like one explosion after another, one jumping around, one CGI grasshopper guy in a nanotech suit jumping around Paris and leaping over Audis. And no character, no humour beyond the trivial. I think one of the things that should happen in action films now, it's probably not going to happen. In fact, I doubt very much that it will, is... yes, you can make an enormous, big-budget, crash-bang-wallop, totally crazy, bug-fuck, over-the-top action film, but you have to get a decent screenwriter who's got a bit of wit to them. Now, this probably won't occur because people are conditioned by the post-Star Wars special effects film to really kind of treat movies the way baby... you ever seen a baby with one of those coloured mobiles with little... coloured things on them above the crib where they all reach out and try to grab all the pretty moving things? Well, for people have been conditioned to accept action cinema as those pretty things. It doesn't need to make sense. It doesn't need to have a function, really. It just needs to be something that's pretty and got lots of bang and makes a lot of noise and makes a lot of pretty lights and does all this kind of shit, but essentially it is an empty product. It really is junk food cinema in a lot of ways. And I kind of like junk food, but I kind of like junk food with a bit of quality. I don't know if you've ever done this, but I have. But you go to an Asian supermarket and you kind of look at the snack foods there and you go, yeah, I'll have a go at that. I'll grab some of that. It's only $2 a packet. I'm not sure what's in some of it. It's got a picture of a peanut on the front, but it'll end up tasting like soy sauce and wasabi and fish. So I'm really not sure what it is, but I'm going to try it. And I think good meathead cult film type cinemas like that, you don't know quite what you're going to get. There's going to be a few surprises in there. It's cheap, you're not going to remember it particularly a week later, but you're having a go, you're trying something different, you're going to just see what it brings to your palate and whether you enjoy it or not. I tried that with anime. I really tried to get into anime, but I was never a big fan of anime. I grew up on Prince Planet and Astro Boy and all those sorts of things, so I was kind of preconditioned to like it. But I really can't get over the fact that all the chicks in anime have really, really odd breasts. It's like breasts drawn by people that have never seen real breasts. And, you know, I think there'd be a room in anime to actually have some female characters that had tits like a human being instead of looking like they've been hit in the back by a couple of cruise missiles. So, never big into anime. I did give it a fair go. Big on Hong Kong action cinema and Chinese action cinema, Korean action cinema, Japanese action cinema, things like that. Haven't watched enough of it lately, and I really should get back into that and see what's the state of the art at the moment. I did see Ong Bak and a few things like that, but I really do need to kind of refresh my memory on that. And also, you know, Japanese horror cinema and Korean horror cinema. I did see The Host, enjoyed that a lot. I was kind of on the bandwagon earlier that I saw it before a lot of other people and kind of got that early buzz and saw the film and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fact that they actually had a character-driven monster movie, and I do enjoy that kind of thing as opposed to the usual slot the characters into the action kind of thing, which is the way that American action cinema tends to go, particularly when there's a giant monster involved. But yeah, I mean, there are a number of genres, and please make suggestions for genres you think I might want to visit. Even if it's not in the paleo cinema thing, I'm always looking for kind of new, fresh tastes of stuff, and I'd really like to find some things to watch that are unusual, are out of the ordinary, and are maybe out of my comfort zone as well. I did, by the way, the review I did of The Informant for the Cool Shot on the Tube guys is up on the Cool Shot website at the moment, so I was quite pleased by that because it harks back to something I did about 10 or 11 years ago. A friend of mine at the time, and I've lost touch with her since, called Ali Kane, was running a movie review website, an amateur one, This is when before the movie review websites on the web were very big. And I did a number of movie reviews in about 97, 98, 99 for her website called Festival. I really should post links to them at some stage. They are on the Wayback Machine at thearchive.org. And I have posted one or two of them onto the Paleo Cinema website, but I really enjoyed that. And getting the tickets from the Cool Shark guys and going back and doing a movie review as a kind of commission is something that I really enjoy and I really want to do more of. So I kind of really got off on that. The Informant, of course, and I don't mind Soderbergh's movies. I think they're always intelligent, and even when they fail, they're an interesting failure. But I really did enjoy the vibe of I'm going here to write about this. And it's one of the true joys in life. Now, just to digress a little bit, I'm currently right at the top of the Westgate Bridge, which is the highest and longest bridge in Melbourne. It spans the east to the west side of the city, so the flat part to the lumpy part. I live on the flat part, of course, and I'm just now driving about 80 metres above the ground across the Westgate Bridge, heading into the west in the middle of the traffic, and I'm podcasting, so I'm a little bit blown away by that. Suddenly, you know, you get that reality check thinking, yes, I'm doing my hobby while I'm driving. And I don't recommend everybody does it. I'm not sure everyone's got the attention span that I do, and I didn't really fuck too many of my brain cells as a young guy with alcohol, drugs, and blows to the head. But nonetheless, I'm quite pleased that I can coordinate talking with a purpose with driving at the moment. And I wish that big fucking Ford would get out of my way because he's veering into my lane. If you hear a loud crunch and there's a sudden deadness and then Sal comes on the podcast crying, you know that I've crunched up somewhere. But that's probably not going to occur. She's not in the car at the moment, by the way. She's got a couple of days off, so I'm driving to and from work by herself. So I'm going to pause again because I'm off the bridge now and I'm in the 100-kilometre zone driving madly, and I've got a few lane changes to do here. So I'm going to take another break, play a little bit more music, and then you'll hear from me some more. And I am just really enjoying this. It's mad, it's crazy, it's stream of consciousness. Nonetheless, grooving on the fact that I can podcast while I'm driving. And again, I've got to thank Sal for buying me the mobile podcasting gear as a Christmas present. Love you lots, babe. And I will get Sal on the podcast this time to do a Newton Mass kind of Mary Newton Mass kind of thing for people. So I will catch you on the flip side. I'm still going to, don't turn off because I'm still going to have more podcasts, but I'm just having a pause now. See you soon.
Hello everybody, this is Sally, Terry's Voice of Reason speaking. I'm wishing everybody a happy Christmas, Newton Mass, or Cool Yule, or whatever other holiday you decide to celebrate today. Have a safe one. Don't eat too much, don't drink too much, but if you do, make sure you know a good doctor. Bye!
Okay, it's time to finish off the podcast. Now I'm going to do the last stretch of... Okay, we're back again with Paleo Cinema Podcast. It's the next morning. I'm in the car, I'm about to head off to work, so just give me a few seconds to get out of the driveway and I'll start talking about a movie. Okay, it's the 22nd of December right now, which is the longest day of the year in the Southern Hemisphere, which is always a lovely thing because the evenings just last forever. But I am going to speak about a movie now, specifically, not in general terms as earlier in the podcast. And that movie is, well... To explain that, I've got to go back to the very first Paleo Cinema podcast, where I talked about my favourite movie of all time, the 1952 movie directed by Vincente Minnelli, The Bad and the Beautiful. And if I could ever get out of my street with the traffic, I will tell you about it. There is a kind of sequel to The Bad and the Beautiful. Not exactly a sequel, but it's got a lot of parallels. It's got the same director. It's got the same actor in it, and in it there is a scene where a scene from The Bad and the Beautiful is shown. It's the 1962, so 10 years later, 1962, Vincente Minnelli movie 2 Weeks in Another Town. It stars Kirk Douglas, Edward G. Robinson, Claire Trevor, George Hamilton, Dahlia Lavi. So basically the story is this. It's based on an Irwin Shaw novel. A washed up... but very famous actor, Jack Andrews, played by Kirk Douglas, has been spending some time in what's essentially a rich person's mental hospital. He had a total breakdown. He tried to crash a car into a wall. He got a big scar on his face. And had a whole bunch of different nervous conditions, alcoholism, a few other bits and pieces. So as a part of his recovery, he gets a telegram, back in the days of telegrams, from an old friend of his, a guy called Kruger, played by Woody Robinson, the movie director who worked with Andrus, and between them they made some of the best movies in history. Kruger's currently in Rome making a movie at Cinecittà Studios, and he wants Jack Andrus to come and do a what's essentially a cameo shot in the film. So Andrus goes to Rome and gets into the lifestyle and finds out there isn't actually an acting job there, but Kruger wants him to assist, kind of be an assistant director, and help Kruger through the problems. To complicate this, of course, there's Jack Andrus's ex-wife on the scene, a woman called Carlotta, played by Sid Charisse, in probably the best role Sid Charisse ever did, who basically is the femme fatale. She's poison to this guy. She's selfish, willful, sexy, manipulative, all the things except for sexy that you don't want in a wife. So basically the story is, it's a kind of a redemption story in a sense. And it's about the redemption of Jack Andrus as a human being. And I'll just play a clip for it now. So I'm going to dub in a clip and then I'll come back and talk a little bit more about it.
Mr. Kruger, you are behind schedule. I need 2 weeks to finish shooting this picture. Then I need time to dub every word of every actor.
Oh, camarera,
si?
Per favore.
May I remind you, Mr. Kruger, you have 2 weeks to complete this film, including the dubbing. After that, here, page 62 of our contract. I control the dubbing.
You?
Me.
You know, I've seen movies you dub, Senor Junkman. You've had your actors mouthing their words like mother guppies gobbling their young. You give me 2 extra weeks and I'll give you a Maurice Kruger picture. Don't you want the best movie you can get?
No.
Don't you have any pride in what pictures you put your name on?
No. The films I produce make money. And you know why? Because I'm an international peddler. On this film, I will make 472,000 net lire, dollars. Even if this film never shows in one single theater. Provided, please, that it does not cost me 1 lira more than our contract says. So, dear friend, you get no extra weeks. You get no extra days. You get not 1 minute.
So the whole thing, La Dolce Vita, is a big influence on 2 weeks in Another Town. An enormous influence on it. There are scenes on the Via Veneto in Rome. There are actors in common between the two films. There's a lot of stuff going on there which parallels some of the things in La Dolce Vita. You kind of almost expect Marcello, the Marcello Mastroianni character from La Dolce Vita, just kind of stroll past with sunglasses on at night and a cigarette in his mouth. I kind of like this movie, and even though it's kind of Hollywood big CinemaScope trash, I kind of like the heart of it, where it says that there is a chance of redemption for a human being. And that there's when one career falls down, there's a possibility of another. It's a film worth watching for that reason. It's got a little more depth. It's got some crazy, over the top party scenes which attempt to kind of emulate or surpass what happens in La Dolce Vita. I'm not even sure it has to be successful on those terms. Now, like The Bad and the Beautiful, it also has a few other things going for it. 2 weeks in Another Town is in beautiful Technicolor, so it's got that kind of rich palette for Minnelli to work on. And of course, Minnelli being Italian, he had some sympathy for the subject matter and the locations. And there are some nice shots of Cinecittà Studios as it was in 1962, which I found interesting. At least I kind of got an interest in Italian cinema, which I picked up from Marty Scorsese's documentary about it. It's one of my favourite movies. Every now and then I'll go and revisit it, and there's a bit where Jack Andrus takes Carlo on a ride in his little Italian sports car and basically tries to reenact the car crash that almost killed him previously when he had his previous breakdown. And it ends on a beautiful scene where, this is the only time I've ever seen this in movie history, and it's not too much of a spoiler, it's just a minor spoiler to give you an indication of one of the reasons why I like the film. One of the scenes is that they kind of drive, there's a little waterfall with a brook, and he drives the sports car under the waterfall so he can get water on his face and kind of clear his head. But I kind of like that that idea of, you know, you find a waterfall and you drive the sports car underneath it to clear your head. So I'll play another clip from it and then I'll talk about something else. Not sure what, I'm kind of stream of consciousness. And yeah, I'll play a clip just to give you another idea of the film, and I'll come back and I'll have a chat about something else.
When you were a star there in Hollywood, before Carlotta, did you have a lot of girls? Girls like me?
Not as many as I should have. Certainly not as many as they said I had.
What were you like then?
Lonely.
So famous and alone.
Everybody's alone. Actors more so.
Then why would anyone want to be an actor?
That's a good question.
Why?
To hide from the world.
Everybody likes to hide once in a while.
Sure they do. Look at any movie theater. What's the audience doing there? Hiding in the dark, trading their problems for mine on the screen. Actors. What a job. You know, I used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, rush through my breakfast, jump in my car, race down to the studio, get into wardrobe, makeup. Get up on that stage, and then at 9 o'clock in the morning, you invent the telephone, win the West, sway juries, make love to the most beautiful women in the world, hour after hour after hour. I thought I had it made. Then, zoom. I was a star. Big business. Hide from the world. They were ramming it right up my gut. Lawyers, agents, managers, partners. All grabbing, carving up my whole life. One day I looked at them all and I asked myself, who are these guys? What are they doing here? What do they want from me? Then the second question you ask is, who you really are? Well, are you the face on the billboard, smeared with lipstick kisses from shrieking high school kids? The face of barflies I want to take a poke at to see if you're as tough as the roles you play in movies. Is that you? Or are you the face you see in the mirror? The face of the guy you've been hiding all your life. So I started running, living in a crowd, bawling it, lots of laughs, lots of kicks. Through it all, Carlotta, I kept running faster and faster. And suddenly, dead ahead of me, there was a wall.
Is there an answer? Does any actor find it?
Some do. That I don't have to worry about anymore.
This driving podcasting thing, I'm going out of the driveway again. It is Christmas morning here in Melbourne, a little bit cool. Not anywhere near as cool as it is in most of the other places around the world, but for a summer day in Melbourne, it is quite chilly. About to drive off and I'm going to head to the beach. I'm going to talk about a documentary I watched this morning. I got up fairly early because I went to bed early last night and saw a documentary called The Magnificent Tati, which is about the life and career of Jacques Tati, the French comedian and movie maker. And if you can get a hold of that, and it is probably around a torrent somewhere, if you can't avail yourself of it any other way, definitely do so. It's a great overview of his career, which had an unusual arc. He was very successful for a time, but making playtime, he was essentially bankrupting himself by making such a vast movie which could never make its money back. He was in that pure sense an artist. He didn't really care about the financial side of things to the extent that modern filmmakers do. But on the other hand, he's left us a legacy of fantastic movies. Now, one of the reasons why I'm probably not going to podcast about Jacques Tati is too much of what Tati as an artist did was visual. I can't really do sound clips that convey pretty much anything meaningful about the movies of Jacques Tati in a podcast form. It's his was an unusually visual kind of cinema, which doesn't lend itself to podcasting very well. But what I will do in this podcast is I'll let you know which movies to see, any of them. Doesn't matter which Jacques Tati movie you see, it's going to be worth it. It's one of those types of films that lend themselves to very careful viewing. There's always something going on. There's an incredible gentleness to the movies of Jacques Tati, which doesn't often get mentioned. They're kind of low-key. They're paced at a much slower pace than a modern film. And there's a sweetness and a gentleness to them which is missing from comedy. I mean, I like raw, edgy comedy as much as anybody else does. I like the filthier the jokes in the comedy, the better. I can handle all that. Terrific. I enjoyed things like The Hangover, which had some pretty gross jokes in it. Never phases me at all. But there's another side to me as well, which likes gentle comedies with a sense of wonder and a sense of the silliness of human nature, which really Jacques Tati was the most extraordinary exponent of. I mean, of course, there are people like Rowan Atkinson who are trying to emulate Tati in a lot of ways. Mr. Bean's Holiday is a kind of remix and a kind of rejig of Monsieur Hulot's Holiday in reverse with the English Mr. Bean travelling for a holiday in France, but I don't think it works very well. I think Rowan Atkinson's mugging kind of detracts from what essentially he was probably trying to do. Not a big fan of Mr. Bean, but I can see the influences on him of Jacques Tati's films. By the way, it's 7:18 in the morning now, and one thing I've learned now about 7:18 in the morning on Christmas morning is there's nobody around. There's nobody driving their cars around at all. I think they're all kind of nailed down to the family kind of things. But for me, I'm going to go to the beach. I'm going to take a couple of photos. I got a new camera last year at Christmas time. That was my Christmas gift for last year. Took some photos down at this beach Christmas last year, so I thought I'd just kind of make a ritual of it and take a few photographs. It's not spectacular beach by any means. It's on the shallow side of Port Phillip Bay, wherever your river flows into the bay at that point. And okay, I decided to start something new with the podcast. Other podcasts do it, and I think it's a very useful way of getting feedback, and particularly Mondo Movie does it. I'm going to have a question of the week kind of thing. So not necessarily a question of the week, but question of the podcast that I'm going to ask you guys to respond to. So what I really want to do is next podcast. Now, we've got the idea for the psychological movie podcast, which is on the back burner because I've got to accumulate the films. Some of them are less easy to get than others, but I'm going to accumulate the films, and then I'll definitely do that. That's a definite for January, February. But maybe podcast after next, because I've got a fair idea of what I'm going to do on the next official podcast. But podcast after next, what I'm going to do is look at some films that, by the way, I just had a couple of glass fly overhead. Podcast after next, I'm going to podcast about movies recommended by the audience. I won't be able to cover everything that people ask me to podcast about, but what I thought I'd do is I'd get you guys to set the movies that I will talk about rather than me setting them. So the question is, which movie do you want me to review next time around? So email that to cultguru@gmail.com. That's cultguru@gmail.com. And I'll select probably three, because three is a good number of movies for me to review for a podcast. I'll select three. I'll probably keep the other recommendations for a future podcast, but I'll select three. And if I am able to get hold of them, I will review them, kind of do some background research, see if I can get a bit of a backstory on them, and review them for the podcast. Now, at the moment, I'm travelling through Werribee South Market Garden area. There are there's a big flat area of land down this way where they grow cabbages and not fruit necessarily, but ground vegetables and things like that down around the bay here. And the whole area is just acres and acres and hectares of cabbages and kale and bok choy and pumpkins and all sorts of other vegetables that they grow down here. It's kind of like the market garden for Melbourne around this way, and I'm driving through that at the moment. It's always good to kind of do that. It's a slightly interesting area of Melbourne. It's only about 30k out of town, but most people never get to see it because all the freeways kind of go around this area. You get a lot of galahs and Major Mitchell cockatoos and sulphur crested cockatoos all in the wild, a few smaller birds and things like that, but it's an interesting area of Melbourne. As before, I'm podcasting before I had my cup of coffee, so I think I'm doing quite well. I must have slept well last night. Coffee tends to kickstart my brain a little bit. It's my drug of choice, but it's nice to be able to just cruise. Oh yeah, I should mention that Bruce from Cool Shot, I mentioned on the Twitter feed and also on my Facebook that I was podcasting while driving, and Bruce had an interesting question for me. He was wanting to hear about the outtakes where I swear at people as I'm driving. You know, you get the road rage thing where you swear at people. I don't tend to do that. I mean, I may make some comments about them after they've gone, but I don't tend to kind of get the angry driving thing happening. Sal does it. Sal goes ballistic. You know, I mean, it's a good thing that there's gun control in Australia, because Sal would probably be a mass murderous by now, shooting and killing tons of people who cut her off in traffic. But not my kind of thing. I'm very kind of low key when I drive. Possibly the reason for that is I didn't start driving until I was in my 40s. So I kind of let my testosterone reach a plateau before I started getting behind the wheel of a death machine. And I enjoy driving. I still find it pretty an unusual thing for me to be doing at times, because I started doing it so late. It's I still got that sense of newness about it at times, that yes, I am controlling this machine. I'm traveling vast distances under my own volition, and it's an unusual thing for me. Most people take it for granted, but I never quite get to the stage of taking driving for granted. I still get a buzz from it. I still get a buzz from the independence it gives. Anyway, we're coming down towards the beach now. I'm actually going to walk on the beach and podcast. It's going to look a little bit weird from any spectator's points of view. But just noticed too, there's a bunch of flowering gum trees. There's a type of Australian eucalypt called a flowering gum, which flowers around Christmas time. And they bring out masses of enormous red flowers. Kind of, well, they're not enormous, but there are an enormous amount of these small red flowers on the gum trees, and they suddenly you go around a corner and there'll be this vivid burst of red. And we're still recording. The podcasting gear fell on the floor, would you believe? Let me turn that off. And I'm about to get out of the car and walk along the beach. So just be a sec while I untangle myself. There's quite a long cord. The mic away from the wind as much as possible and go for a walk along the beach, which I'm doing right now. The tide is in and you're going to get a lot of wind noise. Better lock the car up. Hang on a sec. Yep, and Christmas morning, walking along a beach and podcasting. Totally silly. Okay, here we go. I'm back at home now. I've left the beach. It was cold. And my feet were getting cold, I was getting cold, and so I've left the beach and came back home. I was going to record on the way home, but something glitched on the iPod recording, so that wasn't really possible. The last thing I really want to say is thanks for the support. There's been a lot of support for Paleo Cinema. I'm really gratified by it. I do appreciate it. Listening to a stranger waffle about movies is always a weird thing. But there are a number of podcasts I enjoy, so there's obviously something that we all get from this stuff. I really should give a shout out to the podcasts that I enjoy. Of course, I enjoy Vince's B-Movie Cast. and I enjoy Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, though a lot of the movies I'd never watch. Mondo Movie, of course, and there's a movie podcast that 3RRR Radio does here in Melbourne called Film Buffs Forecast. It's actually a podcast version of their radio show, which is recorded on Saturdays at 12 noon. And of course, there's Rob Jan's Zero G podcast, also from 3RRR. So try a few of those and see what you can make of them. Anyway, I hope everybody's having a safe holiday. Hope that you get hope you get all half of the things you want and all the things you need. And I will be back in a few weeks with yet another Paleo Cinema. So thank you very much.
Hi, Terry. This is David in Adelaide, wishing you and the listeners a happy holiday season. I've just acquired a couple of suitable films to watch over the next few days. Santa Claus, the Mexican children's film, which is reviewed on the latest B-movie cast, and the 1970s porno version of A Christmas Carol called The Passions of Carol. So that'll keep me busy, and I'll catch up with you soon. Bye.